Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. And remember, if you want to listen live, download the iHeartRadio app, download the TuneIn app, and just search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and you can listen to this program live. Also, if you want to watch the video of this podcast, check us out on YouTube, on Twitch, or on Periscope, and type in, you guessed it, Fantasy Sports Network. You'll find us there. Enjoy the show, and thanks for listening.
Fantasy Sports Today.
And welcome into Fantasy Sports Today right here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Kevin Walsh and George Kurtz taking you all the way until noon. So much to get to. Before we even start, though, George, how are you doing on this lovely Saturday morning?
I'm doing well. Always happy to be here with you, Kevin. Taking over for Mike, who's... What is Mike doing this weekend?
I think Mike was at some conference during the week, so I think he is just resting up currently at the moment.
Oh, well, that's good. Mike Blue deserves his rest.
There's a ton of for us to get, right? With the NFL, there are so many stories going on. It seems like none of them they are handling well. The Jameis Winston situation, the number of big-name players that are holding out. Also, maybe are we entering a situation where PEDs, we have to start having a deeper conversation with that in football. On the baseball side of things, of course, things are heating up. I would say the most important series to this point of the baseball season with the Yankees and the Red Sox just kicked off last night. Meanwhile, the Mets and the Marlins are in a series fighting for last place in the National League. We'll talk a little bit about those teams and some others around the league and when they could start their sell-off, of course, in some of the big performances last night. Two touchdowns and a field goal put up by the Nationals against the Phillies. But when you have George Kurtz, where else could you start? But NBA free agency. George, how excited are you for LeBron to pick a new team?
You know, I have to admit, I'm curious. You know, I don't really follow the NBA. I do know LeBron's a free agent. I do know Magic Johnson made his statement that he'll... You know, he'll quit if he doesn't sign a top dollar free agent. So I am aware of this. I'm curious to see if LeBron ends up with the Lakers. When I did follow basketball, which is when I was much younger, it was the Lakers back in the 80s, Showtime with Magic, Kareem, Jamal, and all those guys. So I'm kind of curious to see where he ends up.
Wow, that's actually surprising. That is not what LeBron to the Lakers, really. Now I can confirm that that is a big-time story. If it is something that George will put on one of his three TVs, LeBron playing for the Lakers.
I didn't say that.
I was hoping. What George does know probably better than anybody on this network is hockey. And while the NBA is probably dominating most people's timelines, headlines, and favorite sporting networks with their free agency that's going to begin at midnight, the NHL does as well. And George, there's a lot of stuff going on right now with free agency, specifically for the team that you cheer for. But yesterday, I think there was a pretty big story with the LA Kings extending Drew Doughty 8 years for $88 million.
That wasn't a shock. I think Doughty, although he had made some noise that he wanted to be paid more than Subban, I think we all knew he was going to stay with the Kings long term. You know, I think we already knew that. So not a surprise there. What's going to be a surprise is they signed Ilya Kovalchuk as well. He was one of the top free agent wings, used to be a top player in the NHL, but had left the NHL about five seasons ago and played in the KHL. That's the Continental Hockey League over in Europe, Russian teams, Czech teams. It's a good league. It's not the NHL, though. And now he's back at 35 years old. We're wondering what kind of player he can be. You know, can he still be that same player? But the bottom line here is for the Kings, they're going for it. They're an old team. They're an aging team. And how they're going to afford to pay all these players, not necessarily this season, but next season, is really a mystery to quite a few people. They're going to have to cut some people, make some trades. They're not going to have the depth after this season. They're going for it. Pretty much this year, it's 2018, 2019, or bust for the Los Angeles Kings.
Give me your take on the Kovalchuk situation. You know it much better than I do, so you can clean up any messes I would make. But pretty much, he was with the Devils, and I think that he wanted to go somewhere else, and then they wouldn't let him, so he left for Russia, or he wanted to go to Russia, but then wanted to come back, and the Devils were blocking him forever, and they had originally given him a big contract, because he was a star player when he was in the league. What is your take on that whole situation?
Everything you said is correct. He was a star player, absolutely. Then he wanted to go play for Russia. And I never blame a player for that. He had established himself as a true star in the NHL. And he wanted to go play back home. You know, Jaromír Jágr did that as well. You know, that he wanted to go play back home, play in front of his family, countrymen. I get that. So that never really truly bothers me. Granted, it might if I was a Devils fan. You know, that would certainly be a crusher. But then when he wanted to return to the NHL, this wasn't the first year he wanted to return. He did want to return last year, even the year before that, possibly, but the Devils held his rights. And in the NHL, until you turn 35, you can't come back if the team doesn't want you back. You know, you'd have to go through waivers, and the Devils would claim you back, and nothing would change. So that's what it comes down to there. Devils didn't want him back. They weren't really angry at him per se, just that he wouldn't fit in their salary structure, different kind of team, different GM. Lou Lamoriello, who was the GM of the Devils at the time, was now with Toronto and is now with the Islanders. So that's just how things worked out for Kovalchuk, that he just wasn't allowed back. The Devils blocked him. Like you said, the Devils just blocked him. But once he turned 35 years of age, the Devils could no longer block him. You know, that's in the CBA. He became a free agent. And we knew what teams were going to be interested in him. The Rangers were interested in him, but the Rangers are going on a rebuild. Yeah. There are a couple other teams that might have interest, but really the big interest came from the California teams. Yeah, the Kings, which was sort of a surprise, ended up signing him, but the San Jose Sharks, they had been clearing cap room. You know, they bought out Paul Martin, they made another trade, they had a clear cap room, and we all thought it was for Kovalchuk, and I think it was, but then Kovalchuk turned them down to go to the Kings, mainly because the Kings gave him a third year on his contract, which they're going to eat. And so the Kings are in a lot of salary cap trouble in a couple of years. And now everyone's wondering, what are the Sharks going to do with this additional cap room? And a lot of us are assuming it's for John Tavares.
Before we get to the John Tavares point, because one of the things that did stand out to me, and again, this is just kind of, you know, almost playing catch up, right, with a lot of the way these things work. But the Drew Doughty contract is, it's $11 million annually, which makes him the third highest paid player in all of hockey, which for a defenseman is saying something. And he makes two more million than PK Subban. And perhaps people who are more accustomed to bigger contracts in baseball, basketball, and even football, you might say $2 million, that's not a big of a difference. But when one guy's making 11 and one guy's making 9, that is a massive gap between the first guy and the second guy. And for a defenseman to get that type of number, is that something that you think was a good move? Or, I mean, was it something that the Kings at the end of the day, they just had to do? Because that feels like a high number.
It is a high number. And the NHL salary cap is $79.5 million. And now you got Doughty making, 7%, 11% of it? Mm. You know, 1-7. So, it's a problem. You know, it's certainly a problem for them. They're a team that has and has not as far as salary cap. I mean, Doughty's making money. Kopitar's making money. Dustin Brown's making money. Jonathan Quick's making money. And these guys are all plus 30. So I said, this is an old team. The Kings, hockey, it depends on how you build your team. The Kings build it from the goaltender on out. So what I mean by that is they play well. They want their goalie to be strong and play good, strong defense. Doughty is, if he's not the number one NHL defenseman overall, you know, he's not the goal scorer that Subban could be. Subban's got the 100-mile-an-hour slap shot and lets it go, and he's fun to watch. He's not that kind of person. You're not going to see him on SportsCenter's top 10. Well, I guess you're not going to see any hockey players on SportsCenter's top 10. But you're not going to see a lot of highlights for Doughty. But he is a very good to great defenseman. Could very well end up being in the Hall of Fame when his career is done. And he's the kind of defenseman that you can rely on. He can shut down the Sidney Crosbys of the world, the Connor McDavids of the world. And that's what they're looking for with him, to be that shutdown defenseman, take out that top line of the opposing team. The biggest knock on Doughty throughout his career, and this is something he's gotten rid of now the past, I'd say past 2 to 3 seasons, was that he was a playoff performer. A guy who would, I don't want to say would coast through the regular season, but his game went to a new level during the playoffs. Where, in the regular season, he was a good, solid defenseman. All of a sudden, during the playoffs, he's a Conn Smythe award possibility. That's the MVP of the playoffs. He was that kind of player here. But the past couple of seasons, Kev, he's become that player all year long. He's taken his game to a new level. Maybe you want to say he played with a, I don't know, more aggressiveness, more heart, whatever it might be. But he's changed his game. And I think that's what he's being rewarded for now. He's not just a playoff performer. He's an 82-game performer during the regular season as well. I think he's worth the money. I think getting in the NHL, you should build from your goaltender on out, get that defenseman there. They play in a tough, tough division. You know, they do are going to face Sidney Crosby a whole bunch. They're going to face all the San Jose Sharks. And if the Sharks bring in Tavares, that's someone else that is going to be asked to slow down. That conference they play in is it's tough. The Kings, as good a team as they've been, they've won, what, 2 Stanley Cups in the past 8 years. Mm. You know, they've had some trouble not getting out of the first round the past couple of years, even making the playoffs. So they had to lock up their Doughty. I think they did the right thing here, but I'm curious to see where, you know, when the other shoe has to drop here. When they're up 10, 12 million above that salary cap, what are they going to do?
I think that's a good point. I think it's a conundrum that a lot of teams can kind of find themselves in where it's, you know, do you push all in, right? Because if the Kings are going to end up being uncompetitive, right, at least they made that push. And yeah, maybe a year or even 2 years from now, even just a year from now, they could bottom out or they could be in, you know, in cap hell. But at least they went for it. And at least the guys that they are paying all of this big money to, then at least you know that they went for it. So that could kind of, I guess, be a something that would soften the blow. But as you've mentioned, the Kings haven't been a guaranteed level of success that you would like to see from a team that's kind of making those type of moves. Now, another extension that we did see was that of Logan Couture, if I am not mistaken, for the San Jose Sharks. So they lock him up. And again, it's just more so, at least I view it, from setting the market. But how did you view the Couture move?
Once again, this is not a shock. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're not building through defense or goaltending, then center's next. Up the middle, just like baseball. You know, we always say you play up the middle, right? Shortstop, center field, catch. It's where you want to be strong. Well, in hockey, you want to be strong up the middle at center as well. Mainly because they're responsible not only for offense, but defense as well. Winning those faceoffs, getting back and being that third defender back. Couture has his only problem in the NHL over the past, you know, since coming in, has been health. Yeah, he's not someone who I would call chronically injured. He just suffers weird injuries, gets hit with pucks in the mouth, you know, stuff like that. It's just strange. If you got to feel bad for the guy. It's not like he's always tweaking a groin and he's out again, or a hamstring or something like that. He's had just weird sorts of injuries. But when healthy, he produces, and he produces on whatever line you want to put him on. First line, second line. You know, last year, you know, Joe Thornton has been the number one guy on this, the number one player on this team for, I don't know, a decade. Yeah, he's a future Hall of Famer, and he's been the guy this team is built around. But Thornton's gotten up there in age. Thornton has suffered ACL injuries to both knees the past 2 seasons. You know, he's nowhere near the player he used to. Couture, when Thornton went down again last year, just took over. Had a fantastic season, 34 goals, career high, 27 assists, 10 power play goals. This is something we haven't seen from Couture in quite a while. We've never seen the goal scoring coming from him. He's proven that he can be that number one center. Him and when Evander Kane was traded over there, Kane and Couture carried this team. Like I said, Thornton was hurt. Pavelski got off to the slowest of slow starts, then came on as the season went on. Maybe there's an injury he was getting over as well. But this team became Logan Couture and Evander Kane. And they were good. They led the I thought the Sharks were going to go to the Cup. I thought they'd beat the Vegas Golden Knights. They didn't. You know, and they are a team that really, I think, is if they get Tavares, I think that they're a prohibitive favorite out in the West. And I think that's the move they're going for now, to build up with Couture, build up with Tavares. You got Kane, you got Martin Jones, you got Brent Burns. All the pieces are in place here. I think the Sharks are a strong team without Tavares. Mm-hmm. With Tavares, like I said, I think they have a team to beat out West.
So Tavares is the piece of de resistance of this free agency class for the hockey offseason. Right now, and as you mentioned, the Sharks are one of the big teams contending for him as well. The original list for potential teams that could land Tavares, it was 6 teams. It was the Sharks, it was the Islanders as well, the Maple Leafs were in the running, the Dallas Stars, and the Boston Bruins, and the Tampa Bay Lightning. As we stand right now, and I know that the reports are that we could be on the cusp of the decision, that it should be coming, I think people expect within 48 hours at least. Of those 6 teams, are there any teams that have already been eliminated from this race?
Well, you can read some tea leaves here. The Islanders will only be able to sign him if he signs within the next 15 hours. Okay. Because at midnight tonight, the Islanders lose their biggest leverage, which is that 8th year. You know, in the NHL, your former team can offer you with an eighth year. So theoretically, the Islanders can offer him, you know, 8 years at $12 million, which goes up to $96 million. Any other team, the other 30 teams can only offer him 7 years. So seven times 12, that's $84 million. That's $12 million he turned down. You know, so that's why if the Islanders don't sign within the next 15 hours, or if, I should say if Tavares doesn't accept their offer within the next 15 hours, then he's not going to the Islanders. Okay. You can cross them off the list. I think you can cross Tampa Bay off the list, mainly because they signed JT Miller earlier this week, and Miller's not the player, Tavares is. But right now, they only have $5 million in cap room. Now, Tavares is getting at least $12 million a year. At least. He may even surpass that. But you can do simple math here. You sign Tavares, you only have $5 million cap room. You're now minus $7 million. They'd be allowed to do that. Under the NHL, you can go 10% over the cap. And yeah, I forget when you have to have it, maybe by September 1st, you have to have it down under the cap again. So they could, but now you got to get rid of players? Not sure that makes sense. And they did this after meeting with Tavares, so I don't think he's going to Tampa Bay. It's another thing I think he can cross off. Boston, I don't really think ever really had a legitimate shot. I think they were just, you know, crossing their T's, dotting their I's. The Tavares checked them out. I don't think he's going there. Dallas, the biggest thing about Dallas, and by the way, for Tampa Bay, if you still believe in Tampa Bay, is that the money he'd lose by that extra year, well, he'd make up a pretty good portion of it because of no state income tax, Texas, Florida. So you can make that argument there. The argument against Dallas, however, is, well, you know, if he wants to leave the Islanders because they're not a very good team, it's not like Dallas is a, you know, perennial playoff contender. And Dallas also has to worry about signing Tyler Seguin. Can you really afford to sign both here? I think it's Islanders are still the favorite here, but it's close. San Jose next, Toronto after that.
We come back. I want to talk a little bit more about this John Tavares situation. Plus, the Islanders did make some big moves since we last spoke to George. So we're going to continue that next here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Did you know that you can listen to this show live on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network? Listen on the iHeartRadio app, the TuneIn Radio app, or download the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network is the only totally free 24/7, 365 Fantasy Sports Network of its kind without a subscription. Check out YouTube Live on the Fantasy Sports Network YouTube page and participate in the programming there, where you can ask questions, discuss the topics with other fantasy enthusiasts, or tell everyone that you disagree. Call into your favorite show and ask your question. The number is 844-84-FNTSY. That's 844-843-6879. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network, your free fantasy source 24 hours a day.
We are back here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, Fantasy Sports Today. George Kurtz and Kevin Walsh. That's myself. This is George Kurtz. You can find us on Twitter. I am at the Kevin Walsh. George Kurtz keeps it simple. It's at George Kurtz. Still one of my favorite things is that you were able to get that. I absolutely love that. So we were talking about John Tavares, where he could possibly go. You feel like it could be down kind of to the three teams, right? With the Islanders, the Sharks comfortably ahead, but the Dallas Stars still seem... Within reason. I think the big thing would be probably, at least for Tavares, is deciding how much the changes for the Islanders encourage him and make him want to stay. And perhaps I can gauge that just through your lens, because I remember it was at least a month ago, could have been longer, but you said, if the Islanders do not make changes to the people in charge, I cannot support this team any longer because that means they don't care, so why should I? They've made a lot of changes, including bringing in the head coach of the reigning Stanley Cup champion. So you assess everything now and kind of the outlook for the Islanders, and how do you feel about it?
Well, they've had a pretty incredible last month. Well, since I made that statement, I did make that statement, by the way, not only on this show, on Twitter, I was about done with the Islanders. Once again, this is what I think of any sports team. If they're treating the fans like idiots, and I'm not talking about me as a you know, a fantasy, but they're treating us like idiots, like we don't know, you don't care, you keep giving us garbage, you know, you keep Garth Snow as GM when he's horrible at it, you know, Islanders haven't been a playoff team. You really haven't had a good team since every now and then they have a good year. But you really haven't had a good team in 20 years, 25 years. I mean, it just gets frustrating after a while. So you know, I was certainly ready to move on, and it's a shame that it took John Tavares. I think Tavares is the one who's doing all this. I think they very well understood that there was no chance in hell that he was coming back if this organization didn't start to make more traditional moves, smarter moves, you know, become a more stable front office. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Mm. And the ironic thing is it may have been a little too little too late. They've been, by waiting until after he became a free agent, he may leave anyway. You know, but signing Lamoriello, you know, to run to be the GM or the head of hockey operations, whatever title you want to give him, Lamoriello's a future Hall of Famer. I mean, the day after retires, he's just walked to the Hall of Fame and have his bust done right there. He's that kind of person. He's built several teams. He is that good. Mm-hmm. You know, this is a no-nonsense guy. He knows how to build a hockey team. So that instantly gave the Islanders credibility. Instantly. And then you go and you hire the Stanley Cup winning coach, who's once again built multiple teams. He built Nashville. He's built Washington. Knows what he's doing. He built from a defense on out. You know, and you can't say, oh, he had Ovechkin. Well, what do you have in Nashville? No Ovechkins in Nashville. You know, even now, as good as they are, no Ovechkins. You know, Barry Trotz knows what he's doing. It gave the Islanders an instant credibility where now they're being run correctly. I don't know if you can honestly say the Islanders have had this pairing since Bill Torrey and Al Arbour back in the 80s. I mean, it's been that long since the Islanders had a GM and a coach that I would say, I mean, it's actually gone beyond my expectations of what they've done here. So good for them for finally waking up here. The NHL draft was last weekend. They had an incredible draft. Once again, it worked out for them. I don't think it was anything truly that Lamoriello did. Players just fell to them. It was almost like the rest of the NHL saying, all right, the Islanders need this. Let them have these players. Let these guys fall. And they did. It was just strange. Okay? You just don't see this. Guys who were top five guys, top 10 guys, were falling to the Islanders. And the Islanders said, once again, it worked out well for them. But all of this goes away if they can't sign Tavares in the next 14 and a half hours. You know, you're losing a top 10 player in the NHL, a center at that. Islanders can't replace that. Not this year. You know, they do have the most salary cap room in the NHL. They have $32 million. So, theoretically, sure, they can go out and get somebody. But, you know, top players aren't out there. It's rare that a player like Tavares becomes available. That's what's so strange about this offseason is that Tavares is available. These players don't become available, but Tavares is. So teams are salivating over trying to get him here. So I said all this goodwill and everything the Islanders have built will go away for two reasons. One, you weren't able to sign Tavares. And two is you kept him. You didn't trade him at the deadline. You didn't get multiple draft picks or multiple prospects for him. You kept him. And now you got nothing to show for it. Something we in all sports, you know, we hate. And that'll prove to be a huge black mark on the Islanders if he signs with another team.
Let me ask you about the Barry Trotz situation, because it is something that I am trying to even draw a comparison to throughout any sport, really. And I just can't. Maybe you can, but it is one of the weirder situations. And I think maybe one of the underrated parts of this whole thing is the fact that he only had one team that had yet to sign a coach. And, I mean, for the Islanders, was there any way that they kind of were saying, let us see how that situation plays out? Did they have enough foresight to think that could have been an option? Is it because they were just kind of going through the change of management, so they were just kind of being slower in the process? Like, all of these things had to work where they still had the opening. The Stanley Cup, again, reigning champion head coach, was not only available but couldn't work out the extension, was willing to move on. I mean, how does that situation kind of play out? Because I am still baffled by it.
I think a lot of us are still baffled by it. I think this is very close. What baseball team do you root for, Kev? I forget.
I root for the Yanks.
You root for the Yankees. Remember last year with Girardi?
Right.
They fired him.
Right.
You know, or did I should they offer him a new contract, even though he got the Game 7 of the ALCS. And then you hear from Cashman that this decision was pretty much made in July, that they were going to move on from Girardi. I think the same thing happened here in Washington, by the way.
Okay.
They had already made their decision. They were moving on. They were not going to offer him top head coach money. Now, maybe the Capitals don't believe in that, in spending top money on a head coach. Whatever. You know, the NHL is a cheaper league. You know, and top head coaches in the NHL only make, you know, $5 million. It's not like they're making $10, $12 million like in some sports here. So it was surprising that they moved on from him. I think Lamoriello played this well. You know, I think he realized what was going on there. Now, maybe he knew Washington's philosophy. Maybe it was a known secret in the NHL that Trotz wasn't going to come back. You know, there's a good chance he'd be out there. I think also he realized, hey, I'm the only team that doesn't have a head coach. I don't have to rush. I can wait to see what happens at Washington, see if they sign him or not. If they sign him, all right, fine. I go to plan B. Oh, my plan Bs are still there. It's not like they were four other teams stealing head coaches from him. The Islanders were the only team. So he could wait. He could see what was going to happen. You know, I think if it didn't work out, he probably would have dipped into the Toronto organization where he had been, maybe taking a Sheldon O'Keefe, you know, from the minor leagues. And that's who I thought they were going for because O'Keefe was the coach, I believe, of the Toronto Marlies. I'm not 100% sure there. That's the AHL team. And they were still involved in the playoffs, the AHL playoffs. So I thought he was waiting for that to end and he was going to hire O'Keefe. And it ended up being, I think he was waiting to see what happened with Trotz first. And then he would have gone to plan B. Once again, it just fell perfectly for the Islanders. I mean, it's just strange. Everything's gone wrong for the Islanders, really, since probably the late 80s. But now, this in one offseason, everything's going right. It's just strange. That's why it's just, as an Islander fan, I don't want to say I'm on pins and needles, but I'm anxious to see what's going to happen if Tavares is going to sign here. Because, I'll say it again, all this goodwill sort of goes away, though, if he leaves. You know, he's not a Sidney Crosby player. He's not a Connor McDavid player. But he's still one of the top 10 NHL players. These players just aren't around. If he's gone, it's going to set this organization back. I don't care how good a draft they had. These players they drafted aren't ready to play this year. And I'm also curious. I said they got $32 million in cap space. Tavares doesn't sign. Who are you going to get?
Right.
You know, are you going to go with the Van Riemsdyk? What are you going to get in goal? Even if they sign Tavares, there are no goalies out there. And this team doesn't have a goalie right now. Right now, they have a couple of trash cans that they put in net. That's it. You know, they need someone to play goal there, too. Well, they do. I mean, they're awful in goal. I mean, awful. Literally, I could put a, you know, what we do when we were kids, we would turn over a shopping cart sometimes. That's pretty much what they have in net. I mean, so it's getting kind of ugly here. So I'm curious to see what the Islanders could do. Tavares is the main play here. Once he goes down, then the rest of the frames will, you know, follow along here. But we're all curious. And I said it this week, the longer this waits, and now we're at the Saturday, and originally we were supposed to hear his decision yesterday, the longer this goes on, the more it seems like he's not going to sign with the Islanders, that maybe Toronto, his hometown team, maybe they are going to bring him in. Maybe Tom Tavares realizes, hey, man, I go to San Jose. Hey, I'm going to be in the playoffs every year. That's easy. But I'm going to win a cup. Sooner or later, the Sharks are going to win that cup. They lost to the Penguins 2 years ago. He'd be a perennial playoff. He wouldn't have to worry about it. It's also California. I'd like to live in California. You know, sun, girls, sand, beach. Sounds nice. You know, there's not as much. I shouldn't say no pressure, but there's not as much pressure out there. He plays with Toronto. He's going to have media camped out in his mailbox waiting to talk to him all the time. Hometown team, Toronto.
Yeah.
Toronto, Montreal is the equivalent of the Yankees in baseball as far as media. Toronto's number two. So that, what are they, Boston? Mm. So every move will be, you know, chastised, what he's doing, what he's not doing. I don't know if he'd want to put up with that. But I also heard here, and this is what probably my latest concern as an Island fan, is that he's dating, and I think maybe it's even his fiance, is from Toronto. So maybe she has some input in there. Maybe she doesn't want to leave the area. It's her fan. You know, it's all that, and I get that. So as an Islander fan, I'm getting more and more worried each minute that passes.
Let me ask you this, though, because I understand that when you lose a top player, top five, top ten, whatever it may be, it is difficult. But if I can draw an NBA comparison where the Cavs are very, very close to losing LeBron James, but they're – it's crushing. I mean, of course it's crushing. But the bright side also isn't there. They don't have a lot of young assets that look to have bright, bright futures, and the people in charge are just not all that encouraging. Now, on the other side of things, the San Antonio Spurs are likely going to have to move Kawhi Leonard because he wants out. But once they make the trade, they will have then young pieces that you can be excited about, plus people in charge that you trust, R.C. Buford, who is kind of controlling everything in the front office, and then, of course, Greg Popovich, their head coach. And I think about the Islanders. And not only did they have what is a good draft, and I tried to do some research, and I heard that they somehow landed the best goal scorer in this draft at 11. How true that is, you can let me know, but that just sounds outrageous. But you mentioned that they had a really nice draft, but it's not just the really nice draft. But they also have Matthew Barzal, now the reigning Rookie of the Year, who had one of the better rookie seasons, I would say, that we've seen in recent memory. And then also bringing in the changes to upper management, bringing in Trotz. So I understand that it would be difficult to see a top player like that leave, But can you now look at things and say, you know what? This is a lot better than had we brought Tavares back but had no changes. Or can you at least say, this is way better than I thought it was going to be if we would have lost Tavares? Because it would at least seem that the future could be bright for the Islanders.
You know, it's funny you bring that up. I posted on Twitter probably, once again, about a month ago, back when I was really aggravated. If you're an Islander fan, what would you rather have? Tavares and Snow, that's Garth Snow, a GM, or Snow gone and Tavares gone? You know, if you only choose one, you can't have both.
Right.
You know, which would you rather have? You know, and it's funny. I got response from both sides that it was just get rid of Snow. If Tavares has to leave, fine. Just get rid of Snow. We'll build up again from there. Right. It's just funny how that works out, man. Because I was thinking the same thing here. I mean, it's tough. You know, it truly is tough. I try and separate the fandom, you know, from the analysis here. And Matthew Barzal, you mentioned him. He's a great player. You know, you could see it, but he's small. You know, he's really, I mean, I think I'm bigger than he is. He's the kind of guy who can make you look foolish on the ice because he can pretty much dance on those skates. But, you know, he was the second line guy, which means he wasn't facing the Drew Doughtys of the world. You know, that was Tavares' line. He was facing those. You know, now he's going, if Tavares leaves, he'll be that top line center. So it means he will face those defensemen. How will he do? Now, generally, skating in the NHL will take you a long way. It will. You know, because the game has changed. You know, back in the 80s, 90s, you know, it was hitting was a big part of it. Now they've, like in football, they've taken that out, you know, concussions and all that. So it's tougher to hit nowadays. You hit the head, you're getting suspended. You're getting a 5-minute major, all that. So the hitting is calmed down. That's good for Barzal. I don't think this player survives. This type of player survives in the 90s, 80s, and before that, where, you know, guys are going out and trying to kill you. So it'd be interesting to see, can he do that? But it also weakens your depth. So the Islanders did have a great depth, a great draft. But these players aren't ready to play yet.
Right.
At least probably not. Maybe one does break camp, but probably not yet. Which means this season almost becomes a lost season. But it's also why I said $32 million in cap space for the Islanders. If they don't sign Tavares, man, they can go out and sign whoever else they want. Maybe it is James Van Riemsdyk. Maybe it's Paul Stastny to be that number one center, keep Barzal at number two. You know, so we don't know what their plans are here. But none of these players is Tavares.
Right.
You know, and most importantly, even if they sign Tavares right now, they don't have a goaltender. They don't. You can't. The NHL, goaltending in the NHL is like quarterback in football. You're not winning without one. You're just not going to do it. And the Islanders don't have one right now. Their number one goalie right now is Thomas Greiss, who's no one's definition of a number one. He's barely a number two.
I have a buddy who works at my other job with me, who's a diehard Islanders fan. He would come in, you know, on the regular, and he would be talking him up, and he'd be talking him up. But then kind of as the season would progress, he's just like, I don't understand how we give up this many goals. And so people can kind of just get a bit of a gauge. The Islanders were one of the best goal-scoring teams in the whole league. They were a top-10 team in goals scored. The problem was they were by far and away just the worst at giving up goals. So, I think that you make a great point there, right? Even if Tavares does come back, it does not solve all of the wounds, George, right now, and it might crush you to do it, but do you have a prediction on what we get from Tavares in whether it be 15 hours, 14 hours, 48 hours? Do you have a prediction?
Like I said, Law, the fact that it's going to Saturday now, my hopes of him signing with the Islanders are going down. You know, I just think if he wanted to sign with the Islanders, it would have been done already. It would have done yesterday. His meetings with these other teams stopped on Thursday. So, you know, he had a day. If it was, you know, if he was just meeting him as a courtesy, let's see what's out there. You know, I think it would have been done already. I think right now it's between those three teams, the Islanders, Toronto, San Jose. I don't think Boston. I don't think Dallas. I don't think Tampa Bay is in this. I think it's those three teams. I think it comes down to Toronto, hometown team, and a good team. Toronto's a good team. You know, San Jose, maybe my best chance to win a cup. And the Islanders team I played for, you know, the fan base, getting a new arena. They're making the right moves right now. He's 28 years old. By the time this new arena gets built, assuming it gets built on time, and I have severe doubts about that, he'll be 31. You know, I can't blame him for not wanting to play half his games at the Coliseum and the other half at Barclays. You know, do all this. The Islanders still have some issues to work out here. I think he's leaving. I do. I just think it comes down to the hometown team or the best team. And for me, is does he want to go out in California? Does he want to live out there? It's a big culture change, you know, going from East Coast to West Coast. I'm still leaning San Jose. I think that's where I would go because I'd want to play for the best team. I know Gabe, you know, Mr. Rage there, I think it's Toronto. Yeah, but I'm going to say San Jose. My heart's still with the Islanders, but I think if he was going to go with the Islanders, this would have already been done.
It is going to be a very, very interesting next couple of hours for the Islanders fans specifically, or hockey fans as a whole, because where John Tavares goes, it shifts the league. He is that type of player. When we come back, though, we're going to talk a little bit of baseball, because Yankees-Red Sox, it looks like that rivalry is on its way back. We'll talk about that next here on Fantasy Sports Today.
Have you ever wanted to have a fantasy expert in the palm of your hand? Or better yet, in the pocket of your khakis? Well, check it out. Now you can. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Download it now to your phone. We promise no weird viruses, no strange tracking things. Just 24 hours a day, 7 days a week of pure fantasy knowledge dropping all over your head. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Stop being a weirdo and streaming it online. Get it on your phone. Take it with you everywhere you go.
We are back here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Kevin Walsh and George Kurtz here on Fantasy Sports Today. And I got a question for you lovely listeners. Who wants to go to a 2018 World Series game? Tune in to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network between July 8th and July 17th as we will be playing the DKMS Trivia Challenge for your shot to call in with a chance to attend the Fall Classic in person. The number to play is 844-843-6879. Write this down. Get your pen out. Take it. Put it on your phone. That is 844-843-FNTSY. The contest is sponsored by DKMS, who are looking for your help in the fight against blood cancer. For many patients, a bone marrow transplant is the best chance for survival. And while 30% of patients can find a match donor in their families, 70%, which is nearly 14,000 people each year, must rely on a benevolent stranger to step up and donate. So find out how you can help the cause and go to dailyroto.com/DKMS. That is dailyroto.com/DKMS. And make sure you participate in the DKMS Trivia Challenge, which will be right here on this network from July 8th to July 17th. You call in, you win, and you go to the World Series. And George, we've got two teams that are seeing if they can make the World Series. I would say World Series contenders with the Yankees and the Red Sox. Actually, let me start there. We don't have to go in depth, but George, has your position of the Yankees cannot win a World Series this year changed at all?
First off, Mike Cardona was so happy right now that we're not talking hockey. Two segments on hockey, Mike, I think, is flipping over right now, going, what the hell are they doing? All right, so I think, Mike, I needed that, Mike, okay? I feel much better now. Well, actually, I feel worse because I think Tavares is leaving. No. I don't think the Yankees are going to the World Series. I still think it's Houston. Listen, the Yankees are very – the American League is weird. Mm. It's the Yankees, Red Sox, Cleveland, Houston, and Seattle. That's it. That's why this whole regular season means nothing. You know what this regular season means? Is it going to be Luis Severino versus James Paxton or Chris Sale versus James Paxton in the one-game wild card? That's all this means. Because everything else, you know the five playoff teams. And there's no who else is going to make the playoffs? Give me one other team that anyone thinks can make the playoffs. You know, the third place team in the East – are the Rays. They're 40-41. They're 14 games out. Minnesota's second place in the Central. They're 35-43. You know, I guess you want to go Oakland? Okay, they're 45-38. Nice, solid team. But they're still 7 games behind the Mariners. I mean, and you think the Mariners are playing above their head? So do I. You know, maybe they do come back to the pack. But this really all is down to me just being figuring out is it going to be Chris Sale or Luis Severino versus Paxton in the wild card game. I just think that's the way it is. The reason I don't think the Yankees come in the World Series is pretty simple. You have one starting pitcher. You have Luis Severino. That's all you have. I mean, I know CeCe had a great game last night. You're going to trust in the playoffs? I mean, he's really amazing at the way he's transformed himself into, from a thrower into a pitcher, and it took him a few years to do that. But you can't trust him. Tanaka's, or even when he was healthy, wasn't pitching all that well. You know, Domingo Germán and Loey Seager, okay, good arms, but do you really want to trust them in a playoff series? Houston has Verlander, Cole, Morton. They got pitching up the wazoo. They're just so much deeper than they can hit. It's going to be hard for me to put anybody above Houston. I think they're the obvious team to beat, not just in the American League, but in all of baseball.
And, I mean, right now you can at least just take it for what it's worth. Their run differential is nearly 60 runs better than the next closest team, that team being the Red Sox. Let me stick right there, though, on that point, right? That you say that kind of the Yankees and the Red Sox are trying to figure out who gets to go ahead and play Paxton. Although right now, as good as the Astros have been, they are only 2.5 up on the Mariners. But in a way, when you look at this, with this situation with the Yankees and the Red Sox at all, because people debate this every single year, and it probably won't stop until there's a new playoff format change that people could complain about. It is the one-game wild card play-in. And when you look at the Yankees and Red Sox, who some might argue could be maybe the two best teams in baseball, I think that most, like you would say, the Astros are the best team, the Yankees and Red Sox are competing for whether it be the second spot or third spot, which is fine. But when you look at how good these two teams are, knowing that a 100-plus win team, 105-win team, could be gone because a one-game playoff, is that something that you're okay with, or do you think that it needs to be changed?
Is it fair? No. No, it's certainly not fair. I mean, as of right now, I think the Yankees are on pace to win 108 games, the Red Sox 107. And you're right. James Paxton could pitch a gem that day, and he's a very good pitcher, throwing a no-hitter this year. He could pitch a gem that day, and they're gone. Mm. You know, is it fair? No. It's certainly not fair. This is one of those weird seasons. But we cry about this in the NFL too, right? But a division winner going 8-8 or 7-9, still getting a home playoff game over a wild card team that might go 11-5 and doesn't. It's not fair. But we do put a premium on winning your division. You know, Cleveland should be rewarded for, and they have a team we're talking about here, right? Because Houston's going to have a very good record themselves. You know, so Cleveland's a team we're talking about, but we put a premium on winning your division. You know, and it's not like Cleveland's a horrible team. They're not. You know, they're 8 games above 500, and they'll probably play better. You know, I don't think they play anywhere near up to their capabilities. So I think it's just unfortunate for the Yankees and or Red Sox that you have to take the chance that, you know, Paxton's going to pitch that gem, and you're going to lose. You know, and that's just the way it is. But that's why it's also, I don't know if I'm going to feel all that bad, because both teams can really design their rotation to make sure not only does their ace pitch that wild card game, but that he has full rest or extra rest, whatever they want. You know, they'll be able to finagle the rotation around anyway. I guess the worst case scenario for the Yankees and Red Sox would be the last game of the regular season, game 162. That's Sunday. Mm. You know, they both need to win to get first place. And now you got to make that decision. Oh, God, do we pitch Sale and or Severino that day and then not have them for the wild card game if we lose? That is your worst-case scenario for either team, where it just works out that way. And it certainly could. Obviously, these teams are so close right now, where they're separated by percentage points. Mm-hmm. You know, the Yankees are technically ahead here. So it certainly could happen that way. But in my mind, that would be the worst-case scenario, that you have to make that decision. And your decision is more than likely going to be to pitch Sale and or Severino on that last day. So you hope to win the division. You don't have to worry about any of this. But then you lose, and then you got to go with your number two. You know, which I guess for the Red Sox, David Price, Porcello, whoever that might be. For the Yankees, it's who the hell knows. You know, who's ever pitching well at that time. You know, so, and that's the issue here. That's why you're going to hear so much noise with the Yankees going after not only a starting pitcher, but a good one. Because right now, you know, a lot of the guys we're hearing on the market, are they really, I understand they're more veteran-like. You know, they've been around the wars, but are they really all that much better than a Domingo Germán or a Jonathan Lewis-Iger? You know, probably not. And the Yankees only really need to replace one of them once Tanaka returns, which should be after the All-Star break. You'd love to get a DeGrom, but that's not ever happening. That's all, you know, or Syndergaard for that matter. The Yankees and Mets will never make that kind of deal. Bumgarner, you could, once again, that name's been bandied about, but that's a legacy player for the Giants. They're not dealing him. Fulmer, they pretty much want your firstborn. He's I don't even think there's anybody's answer for an ace. You know, so what are the Yankees hoping to get here? Any Cole Hamels? He's 34 years old. At this point in his career, he's not all that great. And he's got a huge contract for next year that you're going to have to eat. You know, so I don't know if the Yankees. I think they'll get someone for depth, but as for somebody who can makes a difference in a playoff series, I just don't see that. Not unless the Mets, you know, really want to move one of these guys, and I just don't. Even if they did, I'll never see a DeGrom or Thor being traded to the Yankees. I just don't think it could happen. Maybe, you know, and first of all, when I say this, I'm looking at this as an analyst. I hope everything works out for Sandy Alderson, his cancer. But maybe now that he's not the GM there, there'll be more of a better chance to work things out. But I don't think the problem was Alderson. I think it's the Wilpons, and they don't want to take the publicity hit of trading Thor or DeGrom to the Yankees.
I would agree, and we'll probably get a little bit more to the possible moves that'll come for the Mets maybe in the next segment. So this series begins on Friday night. The Yankees take the first game, 8-1, 3 RBI night for Andujar. Judge gets a home run in Bird with the pair of solo shots. And we just kind of very briefly exchanged an email back and forth just about some stuff that we could talk on. And you felt like the first base situation for the Yankees is one of note. Now, Greg Bird obviously has come back and has not taken off the way that the Yankees would like. He is, even after last night, is in still just a very, very poor 204. He's only got 8 RBIs on the season with his 5 home runs. So it has been an interest. It's been a difficult start, really. There's no other way to put it for Greg Bird. Do you look at last night's performance and feel better about moving forward? Or, you know, Brandon Drury, Austin, whoever it may be, do you think that they need to push him more for that job?
Well, I think it's strange, right? Because Greg Bird, he has not taken flight. Aha, get it? No. Okay, fine. So he's not played well, you know. And Neil Walker has played worse. You know, he hasn't looked good at all. So that's been a problem. They sent down Tyler Austin, who had played well for a while, then he slumped and he wasn't playing. Mm-hmm. Brandon Drury really should have been back with the team a long time ago. The Yankees have parts. I mean, Clint Frazier shouldn't be in the minor leagues either. He should be up there with the team. So they have guys who can push other guys, which is generally a good thing. Now, Bird, I found it strange earlier in the week. I just completely thought it was the wrong move to make, that they sent down Clint Frazier when you knew that later in the week you're playing the Red Sox, who are going to start 3 lefty starters. You know, Rodriguez last night, Sale tonight, and then tomorrow they're going with David Price. Wouldn't you want Frazier for that? Instead, you want to call your 14th reliever, 14th pitcher? Really? And that's not a joke, by the way. The Yankees have 14 pitchers on the staff. I think that's really overkill here. You know, so I thought that was a mistake. You know, and I would have kept Frazier up here, the right-handed hit, and he's been hitting for the Yankees. So Bird has some pressure. He's lucky that neither Neil Walker or Austin, when he was there, were hitting any better than he was. Brandon Drury, they just started playing him at first base. He's played first base in the past, but remember, they had Paul Goldschmidt in Arizona. So it wasn't like they really, you know, he's playing a lot of games there, had a lot of action. But the Yankees had been pushing him in the minors to play first base because of the struggles of Bird. Now, Drury's back up. I assume, you know, tonight he's in there at first base. I mean, I don't care how many home runs Bird hit last night. You don't want a left-hander in there against Chris Sale, right? He's one of the best left-hander in the game. A guy who can really, even when you're hitting very well, he can make you lose it as a left-handed hitter. I assume the Yankees go all right-handed tonight. I assume Torres plays short, Neil Walker plays second. You get as many right-handed bats as you possibly can against Chris Sale. And I do wonder about tomorrow then with David Price. Same thing. Do you keep that up? You know, but Aaron Boone admitted last night that he'll have to rethink things after Bird hit his 2 home runs. But one thing to remember is Bird's history against Eduardo Rodriguez, although small, everything small, was a good one. He had a couple of home runs off him in the past. So he is someone he feels comfortable against. I'm still sitting Bird. It's a good sight to see. But before I say, oh, he's back, let's see what he can do over the next week, 10 days.
Fantasy-wise, for Greg Bird, you see the 2 home runs. And if you pair that with typically the way the Yankees organization speaks about him, because they speak very, very highly of him. They think that this could be a guy that has 30, 40 home run potential. Obviously, he's not going to hit that mark at this point in the season, but if he had a second half surge, is this a guy that if you're in a deeper league and he's available, it's worth the ad, or is this someone you would rather be late to and waste a roster spot on a guy that you, as just said right now, I'm playing matchups with? If I get a lefty out there, I'm not giving him a start.
I think that's fair. Would I want him? Probably not. The Yankees love him because he has a sweet swing. For a lefty hitting guy, I mean, his swing is really, really nice. So that's why the Yankees like him so much. Now, am I going to pick him up? 10-team league, 12-team league? 10-team league, no. 12-team league, it's a possibility, depending on who else is out there. The thing is with Bird, I think over a full season, one of these years, he will hit 30 to 40 home runs. I think he'll do it fairly easily. But that's about all he gives you. And power in this day and age, we can find that. Yeah. Right, we can find it. I don't know if that average. I think it'll get above 200. So we don't really care about what he's done from this point on. Right, on this point back, I don't care what he did in April, May, June. I only care what he's going to do in July and on. Mm-hmm. I think the power will be there. It wouldn't shock me if he hits 15 home runs from here on out. Wouldn't shock me at all. But I think that average might be 240 from here on. You know, do you want to take that hit? Can you afford that hit? I think that's what you have to look at here. You're not getting any stolen bases. Yeah, he's going to hit 6th, 7th of a lineup, so his RBIs are going to be reduced a little bit by that. But I don't see where he's a must-get. You know, I mean, maybe you're weak at first base, you're weak at corner infield, you're weak at utility, maybe. But as a must-get, no. It depends on what else you have out there, but no, I don't think you have to go out and get him. And if he doesn't, like I said, next 7 to 10 days, if last night was just an aberration, he's going to be platooned with Drury, most likely, and Neil Walker might get more starts as well if he can ever start to hit.
Now, one of the big things I think that helped the Yankees get this victory was holding J.D. Martinez for an 0-for-4 night. And J.D. Martinez is top 5 in the American League in batting average. He leads all of baseball in home runs with 25 and RBIs with 64. So maybe could start to flirt a little bit with a triple crown. I'm just curious, you look at this year that Martinez is having. When you think, if you're an owner of J.D. Martinez, right? And I only say this because the start is so amazing. It is so incredible. It's better than what the highest of the hype on J.D. Martinez could have predicted. Do you at all, if say you're maybe dealing with a roster that just is not super deep or just not deep enough, do you look at all? Not saying that there's any signs of a slump, not saying that this is a massive fluke, but the way it has been to this point, I don't know if we can guarantee it were to keep up, or if you're someone that has J.D. Martinez, don't get cute. Just hold on.
I'm of the belief that anyone is tradable. Mm. You know, Mike Trout is tradable, you know, if you get the right offer. But as you're saying, I'm not looking to move him. I don't think he's a sell high or anybody like that. I'll gladly keep him. But if somebody wants to offer me, you know, the moon and the stars for him, sure. I'll trade anybody. I own Mike Trout. If someone wants to offer me J.D. Martinez and Luis Severino, Trout goes. It's really that simple for me. I've seen offers, whether it's on our Slack channel, where someone's offered an incredible amount for, I think it was Mookie Betts everybody wanted. You know, at one point, somebody was offered for Betts. Mike Trout, this is when Mike Trout wasn't hitting for like a week or two back, maybe May. Mm. Oh, they'll give him Mike Trout, and it was a top, I think it was Carlos Martinez. I'm like, oh, I'll do the deal in a heartbeat. You know, once again, those are deals you do. Everyone is tradable in the right circumstance. But, and I think it's the way you're hedging as well, I'm not looking to move Martinez. I think he's going to continue to hit all year long. Will he be a triple crown threat? Well, I think home runs and RBI, certainly. I don't think he can get there in average. But his ballpark is really made for me. He drives the ball to right center, can pull the ball. Center. I mean, he's a – I keep thinking – every time I hear J.D. Martinez, you know what comes to my mind? What the hell were the Astros thinking when they DFA'd him in 2014? I mean, really, what the hell were they thinking? As good as this organization has been, they didn't see his talent. Amazing.
And I still just can't get over the fact that there was a point in time where we weren't sure if J.D. Martinez was going to start the year. And he's been one of baseball's best players. This Yankees-Red Sox rivalry is heating up. Also, the Mets and the Marlins, not really. We'll talk about more of that here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Networks next.